for years? Well, then I would scream. I would scream as loud and long as I could. That scream from the shadows was my voice. That was me screaming. Diane, shh. Jackie's head rolled onto Diane's shoulder. Shh, let's just rest for a while. Jackie didn't sleep, but she closed her eyes and wheezed through the pain. Diane looked at the way Jackie's legs curled outward from the knee across the dusty floor, the way her right arm lolled loosely over her torso. Diane felt herself standing in her kitchen at home, heating soup on the stove, listening to the radio. She could smell the vegetable broth. She could hear Cecil's voice. She could feel the steam on her face. She could see herself. This was not a memory, but a moment happening now. Lying with Jackie on the floor of a King City video store, she felt herself splitting, becoming multiple, and in doing so, becoming less with each iteration. She stood up. Jackie had rested enough. Diane helped her, groaning, to her feet. Hello? Diane tried calling to someone, anyone in the store who could help. Hello? Came a voice past the shelves. Hi, how do I find you?
What are you looking for?
You.
What do you need me for?
We're looking for someone. We're new to town, and we just wanted to see if you can help us. We just have a couple of questions.
So ask them.
Diane decided not to walk any farther, not wanting to get lost in the aisles again. Do you have a secret police? We're looking for a missing child.
I'm sorry to hear that. The secret police sounds secret. I wouldn't know about that. We have non-secret police.
We're looking for a police station. Also the city hall. Maybe the mayor's office? I mean, if you just had some phone numbers, that would be helpful. Diane was half shouting. She had no sense how far away the voice was, or from which direction it was coming. Well, City Hall is where the mayor's office is. It's 4.5 blocks down Pleasant Street here. That's the street you're on now. Of course, we haven't had a mayor in years. Gonna be an election soon, I hear. Don't know why, but we haven't had a mayor for, oh, I don't know how long.
Where are you?
If you got a missing child, I'd try the police first. I think there's got to be one nearby. I mean, I don't know for sure. I've never been arrested, you know?
The voice laughed the insipid laugh of casual conversation.
Okay, we'll try that. My son's name is Josh. He's the one who's gone missing. We're not from here. We're from a town called Nightvale. But I think Josh may have come to King City, and if he's here, he certainly loves VHS stores, also comic book stores. Have you seen any 15-year-old boys here? He probably would have been shopping by himself.
No reply.
Or maybe a comic book store nearby. He definitely would have gone there.
The shop was silent.
Hello?
She looked at Jackie.
It was real. Don't worry, Jackie said. I heard it too.
Some of the shelves just had empty cardboard VHS sleeves, no sign of their corresponding tapes. There were puddles on the floor and cobwebs along the top shelves. The more Jackie looked around, the more she thought they should leave, as soon as possible. Diane did not believe Jackie to be frightened, just impatient to go. They hobbled together to the front door with no hissing, no screams. As they stepped outside into the sandy dusk, the bell on the door jingled faintly in Jackie's mind, like a favorite song to which she could no longer quite remember the tune. There was no police station in sight. Diane and Jackie leaned into each other. They walked as one, their arms intertwined so it wasn't clear who was holding up whom. They entered one of the few other stores that appeared open. Fish and Bait. The shelves were full of empty jars. A man stood behind the counter. He was towering, the tallest man either of them had ever seen.
Hello, managed Diane. Her head seemed to be several feet behind her,
and her hands floated in front of her like balloons.
"We're looking for a boy, a teenager. He looks like, well, a lot of things. He's..."
The man nodded absently, saying nothing. Jackie's entire body felt liquid and heavy, sloughing off her fragile skeleton. She had never been in more pain. Each step was a decision that she had to make every time.
"Feel free to look around," the tall man said.
He gestured with an open palm. Behind him, one of the empty jars exploded with a pop. A few shards of it went into the back of his hand. It began immediately to drip blood. His face did not change at all.
"We're looking for a boy, my son."
Diane couldn't stop looking at his fresh wounds. The man frowned. He looked closely at them, as though they were not who he had thought they would be.
"Who did you say you were?"
he said. Another jar exploded. This time some of the glass went into his face. Blood went down his cheek like tears, dripping with loud taps onto the counter. He frowned at the sound.
"We're just looking," said Jackie,
pulling with all of her strength, which was not so much at all, on Diane, who was frozen staring into the man's eyes. The man was staring at Jackie.
"Nice shop you have here. Have to go."
The two women hobbled out. Two more jars exploded. The man had quite a lot of blood coming from all different parts of him. He looked down at their leaving from the height of his body.
"We try to remember, but we always forget," he said.
Diane turned, hand on the glass door.
"What was that?"
"Have a nice day, and thanks for shopping with us," he said.
His words were coming out slurred. There was a long shard of glass through his tongue. The two of them pushed their way back outside, nearly falling over one another.
"This is all wrong," said Diane. "This is not a safe place for Josh to be."
"It's not like we haven't been in stores where clerks bleed a lot," said Jackie. "But..."
She trailed off, her gaze focused on no fixed point. Most any bath gel or greeting card store in Nightvale has a full staff of bleeding sales clerks, struggling to maintain consciousness and constantly mopping the floors. But somehow in King City, it felt incorrect, like the people were not supposed to be bleeding constantly, like they had once been normal, whatever that meant outside of the only context she had ever known. In her mind, Diane saw a different man than the one covered in glass shards. Or it was the same man, but he was running a store in which he did not bleed, in which nothing exploded, in which he sold supplies for fishing, and at night went home to his family, watched old television shows one episode right after the other, and then slept one episode right after the other. She saw that man and this man at the same time. He was multiple and becoming less with each iteration.
"We can't hear the freeway," said Jackie.
"What?" Jackie pointed at the 101. So close they could see the writing on the big trucks carrying things from the north of California to the south. "There's no sound." She was right. It was completely silent. Even their footsteps seemed to be absorbed by the sidewalk. The loud hum from the sky was gone. They walked in silence past planters teeming with drought-resistant succulents blooming big purple flowers. Diane felt herself carrying clothes from her dryer, organizing the warm cotton piles into manageable squares on her bed. She felt a King City street full of cars and shoppers, ordinary stores run ordinarily. She felt these things, and at the same time she felt Jackie against her, felt the empty horror of the silent city. The next store had a sign saying, "Guitars." An elderly woman sat in a folding chair at the back. The store was, otherwise, empty. No furniture, no merchandise, just walls that had been sloppily painted into streaks of different off-whites, and a hideous green carpet traversed by a pink, jagged line and speckled with yellow diamonds. The carpet was torn and fixed with silver duct tape here and there, the tape bright under bare fluorescence. The woman looked up from what she was doing, which was staring at her hands. She now stared at Diane and Jackie.
"We're looking for a boy, about 15.
The woman squinted.
"We're looking for a boy who might have come here. He was..."
The woman opened her mouth and stuck out her tongue. Her tongue and gums were gray. Her eyes were squeezed shut, and her mouth was as wide as she could make it. She started making a wet, huffing noise like a drowned engine trying to start.
"Okay," said Jackie. "We're gonna leave now. Thank you."
Jackie turned Diane around and leaned on her to get her to leave the store. Diane's eyes never left the clerk. She saw a wall full of acoustic guitars, a middle-aged woman behind a counter selling a set of strings to a customer. She saw blank walls and, as the door swung shut, an old woman, eyes squeezed shut, huffing and wheezing with that wide gray mouth. She saw both, equally real before her.
"What now?"
said Jackie, wincing into the words as she leaned against the hot stucco of the guitar shop wall. Her ability to hide her pain was faltering.
"One more store, then City Hall," said Diane.
Her ability to hide her despair was faltering.
"I'm worried we won't make it out of the next store if we go in it."
"That's a worry, yes. Yes, it is."
The next store said Cellular in red letters. Inside were display cases full of the newest models of cell phones. There were signs explaining about contracts and data plans. A young woman in a baseball cap and gray polo smiled at them as they walked in.
"Hello,"
she said.
"This isn't what I expected," said Diane.
"Oh, did you read our sign?" said the woman. "We're a cell phone store."
"We read it," said Jackie.
"We also do repair. Do you need a phone repaired?"
"No," said Diane. "I'm sorry. We've come a long way in a very short amount of time."
"Dude, what's up with your town?"
"King City?"
said the woman. Concern passed briefly through her expression, and then it was bright again.
"It's a great place."
"Great? How?"
"Not sure," said the woman. "Not a lot sticks in my memory. First thing I remember is you guys coming in. Do you want a cell phone?"
"No,"
said Jackie. "We're looking for my son. He's about 15 years old," Diane said. One of the phones in the case started ringing. Concern returned to the woman's face and stayed.
"Those don't even have circuits in them," she said.
There were sweat rings on her shirt.
"They're cardboard boxes with stickers to simulate the display. All the real phones are in the back."
"Do you mind if we try answering it?" said Diane.
"Just don't tell me what you hear, okay?"
She no longer looked at all happy to see them. She pulled a key from a green rubber belt loop and used it to unlock the case. The phone that was ringing was an older touchscreen model. Diane picked it up. Definitely empty cardboard, and the display was a faded sticker. She pushed on the sticker where she would push to answer a cell phone, and then held the cardboard phone to her ear.
"Hello?"
"Stop being so obvious about yourselves," said a man's voice, one that she was familiar with, although she could not place it.
"Obvious about ourselves?"
"Everyone knows you're here. It's not safe." Diane pulled the cardboard phone away from her ear. Printed on the fake phone's fake cardboard screen was a familiar-looking name.
"Evan?"
"No, it's Evan."
That's what I said, Evan.
Meet me at City Hall. Head straight back. Ignore what anyone tells you and ignore any signs. Just go down the hall from the front door and turn left when you see a door marked Mayor. I'll be waiting for you there.
There was a click. She guessed he had hung up, but she didn't know how he had called the cardboard phone in the first place.
Evan, she said to Jackie, he asked us to meet him in the mayor's office at City Hall.
Please, I don't want to know what any of that was about, said the woman. Her face was a grimace, and her shivering arms were crossed over her chest.
Please just leave. What is this town, really?
Jackie said tenderly, hoping to coax a memory out of her. The woman relaxed and exhaled. Jackie felt a breakthrough, a confession or revelation coming. But there was only another, weaker, please leave.
The woman's face tightened back into sweat-drenched angst.
I'm sorry, said Diane. Can you just tell me which direction down Pleasant Street to get to City Hall?
The woman grunted and ran through a door marked Employees Only, slamming and locking it behind her. Her voice came muffled through the closed door.
We don't even have a mayor. We haven't had one in years.
So, City Hall? Jackie said once they were outside.
That's where he is, I guess, said Diane. She shielded her eyes and looked down Pleasant Street. Let's just start walking this way and see if we can find it.
It shouldn't be hard to find. City halls are always huge and ornate and topped with ancient volcanic stone towers. Or, I mean, the only city hall we've ever seen is like that.
There was nothing that looked remotely like that. There was a Safeway that was boarded up, closed for renovations, said a sign hung crookedly on the boards, and then someone had crossed out renovations with a paint pen and written in, good. There was only one building left. It was low and small, with curtained windows, like a storefront church or a campaign office.
I don't suppose that could be City Hall, said Diane. She started to move to it.
Jackie was looking the other way.
Troy, she said.
What? Troy was casually trotting across the road, and then he was gone, down a side street.
You go meet the man in the tan jacket. I'm going to find out what Troy's doing here.
Jackie took off after him, running as hard as her pain-racked body would let her, which wasn't fast. But it was going all right, and in the right direction, damn it. Shockwaves of agony exploded up her legs as she ran.
Wait, Jackie, Diane called. We shouldn't get separated. This place is wrong. I don't know if we'll be able to find each other again. Jackie!
But Jackie was gone. Diane started after her but stopped, thinking of Josh. Josh was what mattered. Jackie could take care of herself. She needed to find Josh. She sighed and walked across the street to the building. It was brick, with a mirrored front window, and a small plastic card that said, City Hall, on the door.
Okay, Diane said as loudly as she could. Here we go.
She pushed open the door. Somewhere else at that same moment, she was petting a kitten in a shelter pen. The kitten purred and rolled on its back.
I have to take this one, she said.
Somewhere else, she was repainting an old dresser. Somewhere else, she was standing in a fish market overpowered by the smell. Somewhere else, at that same moment, she was dead. She did not feel anything at all from that version of herself. It was just a gap in her consciousness, a nothing superimposed on her multiplying selves. The door of City Hall shut behind her.
43. Inside City Hall, there were stacks of files and papers around a groaning titan of a copier. The machine constantly churning out paper, collating it, and then pushing it aside onto the floor as more came. A woman in a dress with a dizzying pattern of blue roses repeating against a white background sat at a desk next to the copier. As Diane pushed open the door, the gust from outside caused the sign-in sheet in front of the woman to flutter into her face. She did not seem to notice. Behind the woman's desk was an enormous oil painting of a man in a tan jacket. His face was clear. It was more or less symmetrical. He was not quite smiling, but not quite frowning either. Was that not quite a smile? She could remember everything about the painting when she looked away from it. She looked back, and then looked away again. Her memory retained all of it.
"Can I help you?"
said the woman without looking up. She was typing away at her computer, which did not appear to be on. She was crying, silently and profusely.
"I don't think so," said Diane, feeling herself here and elsewhere.
Without Jackie, the feeling of becoming more people and less of a person was worse. Without Jackie, she had no one to lean against, to touch, to reinforce with physical contact that she, the Diane in King City, the Diane looking for Josh, was the only Diane that mattered. Another version of herself was eating shredded wheat at the counter of an unfamiliar kitchen, trying to decide what to do about some information she had just received by phone. Another version of herself was driving and had to swerve. She had only seconds to swerve. Her heart pounded, and she wondered if she would swerve in time, and if she would be able to regain control after she had. The version of herself that was dead was still dead. And had been for a long time, a blank spot sitting in the way of her other thoughts.
"All right," said the City Hall receptionist.
Tears poured down her face. Her body shook.
"Are you okay?"
Diane asked. The woman looked up. Her eyes were red and hollowed out by the sheer quantity of salt water passing through them.
"No, I don't think I am."
She looked back down and continued to type on her switched-off computer.
"What's wrong?"
Diane wanted to help, but the woman did not respond. A man who looked identical to the large oil painting above her stuck his head from around the corner down the hall. "What did I say about trying to interact with anyone else?" He sounded tired and annoyed. "Get down here." His head disappeared. And Diane couldn't remember what he had looked like. She could remember the painting, though, and grafted the painting's features on that blank in her mind.
"I have to go," Diane said to the woman at the desk.
The woman didn't seem to hear or see Diane anymore. She typed away on her useless keyboard. Diane went down the hall. The building was bigger on the inside. There were many doors, some marked with abstruse letter and number combinations. Most were unmarked. She could hear no one else in the building besides the weeping woman and the man down the hall. Nothing except the roar of the copier, an avalanche of paper tumbling from its maw. Had it been the copier they had been hearing since coming to King City? That distant, ceaseless roar? She dismissed the thought. The hallway continued in seemingly unending bends, left turn after left turn, strangely labeled door after unlabeled door. Then a door marked Mayor.
"Come in, come in,"
he said from his desk. His office was piled high with more paper. There were several corkboards with papers thumbtacked to them, and a whiteboard covered in frantic, illegible writing. Some of the writing was circled with arrows pointing to other parts of the writing. A window was open onto a back alley, and there was a garbage can just outside. The room smelled rich and earthy, like decay just turning to loam. His deerskin suitcase was open on the desk beside him, between the piles of papers. Hundreds of large black flies were inside it, crawling over each other in heaving, buzzing piles. Flies were leaving the suitcase and flying out the window to the garbage can, and other flies were returning through the window. Diane felt dizzy, frightened that her fear would overtake her body, even more frightened that the flies would. Somewhere another version of herself was sitting at her bedroom window in the morning, looking out at a tree she liked, and this kept her together. "Sit down," said the man, continuing to tell her what she should do next, like it was the most natural thing to him.
"No, I'll stand, I think," she said.
The man rolled his eyes. The flies buzzed louder.
"Suit yourself."
He swept a pile of papers off his desk and replaced it with another pile of papers from the floor.
"Where's Josh?"
"We have much to talk about."
"No, we don't. Where's Josh? I'm taking Josh and I'm going home."
"I'm sorry, Diane, but you're not going to do that." He folded his hands in front of him. A fly landed on his shoulder and also folded its appendages in front of it.
"Anyway, I don't know where Josh is precisely," he said. "Around, I suppose. The important thing is that he's in King City, and he'll stay in King City. For now, at least. Until everything is right again, he'll have to stay here. I've worked for a long time to get him here."
Some other version of Diane was running, although this Diane wasn't sure whether it was for exercise or to flee. She didn't have access to the other Diane's emotions, only her speed. She had trouble focusing with so many versions of herself in her head.
"Where is Josh?" she said, and moved at the man with her hand up.
She wanted to destroy him. She had never wanted to destroy anything before. He sprang out of his chair, face red. The flies formed a furious, pulsing black cloud between her and him.
"Attacking me won't help," he shouted, and the flies echoed his words with their buzzing. "Now sit down, Diane Creighton."
She did not sit down, but she didn't move forward either. This wasn't because of what he said, but because the large black cloud of flies made her anxious. The other Diane in her head had stopped running, although she didn't know whether this was because the exercise was over or because she had been caught.
"Josh is completely safe," he said, sitting back down. The cloud of flies lowered with him, still staying between him and Diane. "But this town needs him."
"You're the mayor of this town, if you can call it a town. Why can't you work out the problems on your own? Why would you need a 15-year-old boy from some other place to do your work for you?"
"This town doesn't know that I'm mayor. Ever since the problem started, no one can remember me."
He reset himself to a milder tone, a gentler posture.
"I was mayor when that man came to town. And ever since then, the people of King City will regularly decide they need to elect a mayor because they don't have one. They will go through all the motions of that, setting up the polling places, arranging candidates, talking to each other about who would be right for the job, or mostly not paying attention and not talking about it. And then, on the day of the election, someone involved will look at the paperwork and realize they already have a mayor. Confused and frustrated, they'll take everything down, cancel the whole election, and go home unsatisfied. Then, a few months later, they'll start again, having forgotten completely that I exist."
He gestured to the cloud of flies in front of him, and they settled back down as a squirming ball in the open suitcase.
"It's been so long since anyone could remember me at all. To be remembered is, I think, a basic human right, not one that occurs to a person when it is there, but like a parched throat in a desert when it is gone."
Diane didn't care about the man's problems, but there was one part of what he had said that interested her.
"Who do you mean by that man?"
44. Jackie followed Troy to a bar. She knew what it was because it had a large sign saying bar outside. It was in a wooden building that it shared with an insurance agency. The building itself looked old and worn, but also like it might have been built recently to look old and worn. Troy went inside, and Jackie followed after. She couldn't see him. The long bar was full, even though the working day wasn't quite over. All men, of course, she rolled her eyes. All the booths were full, too. All men, all hunched over. There was the gurgle of a tap. The bartender, whom she couldn't see over the line of men at the bar, was pouring a beer. Maybe for a newcomer to the bar, one who had just walked in. She headed in that direction. Her eyes were still grappling with the change from glaring sunlight to dim bar, and so she could not see what was happening when shouting started from the back of the bar. "You son of a bitch! Say it again!" There was the thump of a person falling over. The men at the bar were turning with interest, and she noticed something odd about them, but it was lost as the fight in the back became more violent. "I'll say it as many times as I want." A few punches, a clatter of people running into chairs, more punches. The men were starting to get up and run to the back. "If you break anything that belongs to the establishment, you will pay," shouted the bartender. "Cash or jail time means the same to me." But he too started to run to the back. "Gentlemen, please," he said. He was blonde. Blonde. That was what she had noticed. All the men in the bar were blonde. Her eyes started to focus in on dim shapes. She followed the last of the running men to a small open area with a pool table and jukebox in the back. There were two men on the floor, wrestling and flailing. Their faces were red. Both of them were Troy. "Gentlemen, take this outside at once," said the bartender. "Ah, let them fight," said one of the bystanders. "What else do we all have to do out here?" She recognized both voices. The bartender was Troy. So was the bystander. Her vision fully adjusted. She was surrounded by an enormous circle of Troys, watching the two Troys fight in the middle. Every person in the bar was Troy. The crowd around her swayed in empathetic motion with the fighting men. She was jostled in the wave of Troys. As she tried to squeeze herself from the crowd, the group of alike men next to her lurched left and knocked her to the floor. They were laughing and cheering and attempted but failed to step gingerly around her tender legs. She grunted and cursed. One of the men made a barely attentive hand gesture toward her, but otherwise, they ignored her. So, with great pain and exasperation, she lifted herself to her feet and edged her way behind the moving mass of men back to the exit. She sagged against the wooden facade of the building. She wished she had Diane again. The pain in her left arm was making it hard to think or move. She worried that pain meds would cloud her mind, and so she paced herself with them. Anyway, the pain meds the hospital had given her were just a bag of wood chips, and so she doubted their effectiveness. A blonde man with a future shiner across his right eye staggered out of the bar. He stopped near Jackie and looked down the street, cursing under his breath. "Hey," Jackie said, pushing off the wall with her back in hopes of not looking so weak, although her pain and the shock of meeting Troy after everything she had learned about him made her sag right back against it. Without much practice to this point in her life, she tried, clumsily, to make casual adult conversation. "You smoke?" "No, sorry," he said, looking at her without recognition. "Neither do I. Don't know why I asked. I'm sorry. My name's Jackie. What's your name?" "Troy." His eyes narrowed. "How old are you? Your parents know you're at a bar?" "My dad does." He looked out over the empty fields and low, brittle-grassed hills to the always busy 101 and the deepening sky of late dusk behind it, rubbing the back of his head vacantly. He looked concussed, but more than that, he looked like he knew something he didn't want to know.
All right, kid, I got clocked and just need some air. Gonna head back in and...
What's the deal with everyone here? Why do you all look the same? Are you all named Troy? Do you know Diane Creighton? She had so much to ask. Like when you run into a favorite actor or author. How do you say everything you've wanted to say to a person who has been a big part of your life and doesn't know you at all?
Diane? Troy said, frowning nervously.
Diane Creighton from Night Vale. She's raising your boy Josh.
Oh. Well...
Troy nodded, edging toward the door.
How is she?
Why don't you ask her yourself?
She let him hear the bitterness in her voice.
Yeah,
he said, not exactly in response to what she said, but just to make a sound.
There's dozens of you. Why doesn't one of you go talk to her? Do you do anything but sit here and drink?
This is just who I am.
Jackie.
Jackie, I am who you see. I don't know how to explain it, how to...
He grunted.
It's hard, okay? It's just the thing I deal with.
The door to the bar opened, and another Troy came out. And then several, if not all, of the Troys came out. They all stared sideways at Jackie.
Whatever, it's fine,
she said, not afraid of any one of her fathers, but nervous around so many.
Of course it's fine, the Troy with the bruised eye said. I don't have to explain myself to you. I don't know you.
How'd you break your arm? Why does your dad let you drink?
Why are you bothering me about Diane?
The Troy stepped forward. One of them said,
Is this girl bothering you?
Another one said, Give a guy some room, lady. And another one said, Back off, guys. And another one, and Jackie wondered if she imagined this one, it was so quiet, said,
Jackie?
The crowd of Troys were all speaking at once to her, to each other. She backed up.
Listen, man, she said, all of you, men, I just... All right, I gotta go.
Her father was so many, and all of him did not know her. She limped away as quickly as she could. Once out of sight, she fell against the stained stucco wall of a store with a sign that said, Plants, slumped and aching. None of him called after, and none of him followed her. One by one, all of him drifted back into the bar.
45. Jackie pulled on the front door of City Hall. But it was locked. She shook it a couple of times. She knocked. She tried bleeding on it. Nothing.
Open! She shouted at the door. Open up!
But it was not a shouting door either. The buildings in King City looked mostly the same. Mostly cold and colorless. But City Hall, the breath of life for any living city, sat small and shriveled like a smoker's lung.
Come on! She whined, helpless.
Nothing in this town made sense. Nothing makes sense anywhere, she supposed, but the difference between the comforting nonsense of home and the alien nonsense of King City made her feel deeply the miles between there and here, and the time that had passed since she had felt comfortable anywhere. She kicked the door. And the only result was a searing wave from her toes up her leg and through her arm. She walked around the building. On the far side was another door. Unlike the front door, it had no signage and was plain and heavy and dark. Also, unlike the front door, it was open. Instead of a trash room or storage closet, the back door led into a classy, if dated, reception area. The left and right walls were lined with paintings of people in chronological eras of dress. Under the paintings, on each wall was a plaque that read, Former Mayors. The receptionist sat at a metal desk, and on the wall behind the receptionist was a painting of a man wearing a tan jacket. On the desk was a guest sign-in sheet.
"Hi, did Diane Creighton come in this way?"
Jackie said, leaning over the sign-in, scanning for Diane's name. Every line was blank. The receptionist grabbed the sign-in sheet away from her.
"Do you have an appointment?"
she said, her voice hoarse and her eyes swollen.
"My friend was here to meet with the mayor, Evan?
Jackie said, curling his name into a question.
"Everett! Elliot! Your mayor. She came to meet with the mayor."
"We don't have a mayor." The receptionist smiled, as if this had been a convoluted icebreaker, and now they could have a real conversation.
"You do, though."
"I'm sorry, we do not currently have a mayor. We're an unusual town in that way, I guess. If your friend said she was coming to see the mayor of King City, she was either lying or disappointed." The receptionist smiled, turned from friendly to smug.
"No, you do. Look."
Jackie pointed to the painting behind the receptionist.
"I have never seen that painting before." "Read the plaque."
The receptionist read the plaque aloud.
"Current mayor. That's who I'm here to see."
"How did I not know that we have a mayor?" The receptionist frowned, looking neither friendly nor smug. She stood and said,
"Wait here,"
before running out the entrance of the building, leaving a ring of keys on the desk and an unsecured computer, which on closer inspection was unplugged. And on even closer inspection was a painted model carved of wood. Jackie shrugged, grabbed the keys, and headed down the hallway next to the reception desk. There were few doors along the long hall. What doors there were had no knobs or hinges, which made them not doors, but door-like walls. They had frosted glass windows and etched room numbers that followed no simple logic. 43-EE was next door to AX-6, which was across the hall from L. Jackie tried pushing on them and sliding them and knocking on them, but nothing happened. The hall was long and winding. There were no tributary hallways. Given the small size of the outer building and the incredible length of the hallway, Jackie was certain the hall was spiraling underground. But every few feet, there was a window facing outside. Jackie could peer out and see trees and buildings and taupe slow-moving traffic. The last light of dusk mixed with the anemic low-watt fluorescent lighting. She knocked on each door, hoping to find someone, hoping to find Diane or the mayor or whatever he was. Sometimes she thought she heard voices in soft conversation behind these non-doors. And as she would knock and push and shake the wall, the voices would go silent. She pressed her face to the frosted glass when she heard voices, hoping to see inside, hoping just to catch movement of some sort. Even if it meant a terrified or irate employee bursting into the hallway to confront her, that would have been fine by Jackie. She would at least have someone to talk to. But each door, nothing. Nothing at door 55. Nothing at door T9. Nothing at FLX-8I.7. Nothing at 2. Nothing at supplies. Nothing at 3315. Something at CTY.REC. Something small. It was one of the few doors that had meaningful lettering. She listened at first, then pushed lightly, then heavily. She tried lifting and sliding the door. She knocked. She pressed her face to the glass. She didn't know why, but she did something she had not done at any of the other non-doors. She put her hand to the glass. She set her palm against the glass and spread her fingers. When she lifted it away, it left its ghost upon the glass, a hand raised to say, "Stop," or "Come here," or hello, or help. Or maybe only, I am here. This hand, at least, is real. Behind the handprint, she saw a shadow approaching the glass.
Diane?
Jackie stepped back and prepared whatever energy was left in her to flee, whatever might be behind the door. As it neared the glass, she could see that the shadow had what looked like antlers, sleek, tapered antlers from a bulbous skull.
Diane?
Jackie asked, less hopefully. No, said a voice, and the door began to crack. A yellow sliver of light split the black floor near Jackie's feet and began to widen. Jackie could not move. The door opened, and she saw. 46.
Who do you mean by that man?
Asked Diane.
Troy,
said the man in the tan jacket.
Troy,
she said.
Diane, he said, let me tell you a story about Troy.
A story about Troy. There once was a town called King City that was completely normal. Or it had many small abnormalities, minor secrets, moments throughout its history that didn't quite add up, and events that no one ever talked about. And in that way, it was completely normal. It sat on a stretch of the 101 freeway between a town called Greenfield and a state wildlife area. This stretch of the 101 was not interesting to anyone. Citizens of King City would dispute this because they had been born there, or had fallen in love, or had gone south of the law, or gone above expectations, had lived full lives along that stretch of freeway. But for most anyone else driving past on their way north or south, it was nothing, and then a town, and then not a whole lot more. The mayor of that town was a young, energetic man, with a wife and a daughter and a house. There were people he loved and things he owned. There were also people he did not love and things he did not own. He lived a full life. Not long after he was elected, a new man arrived in town. People arrived in town all the time. It wasn't that distant from other places, and it was along a major thoroughfare. There was a Taco Bell where people could pee. There was a gas station where people could pee. There were all sorts of things. The mayor was proud of his town. But the stranger wasn't passing through. He was coming to live. He said he came from a town not that far away, or possibly quite far away. He wasn't sure. Distance is confusing, the stranger would tell people, anyone who would listen. So is time. He would shake his head and invite them to join him in considering the folly of space and time. This was not why he was noticed. Why he was noticed was that he was very helpful. As it turned out, he was that rare combination of nice and competent. There didn't seem to be a lot he couldn't do. Car troubles? Sure, I know a thing or two about engines. Nothing much, but I can take a look. And the car would be running in no time. Bill troubles? Actually, I know a bit about the law and that stuff. Let me just talk to them for a second, see if there's anything I can work out. And the bill collectors would never call again. Broken heart? Buddy, you don't know how much experience I have in that area. Let me buy you a drink and we'll talk about it. And while alcohol never fixed the problem, it certainly made the person feel better for the time that the conversation lasted. Everyone in town grew to like him very much. That Troy, said Inez, an older retired woman who worked weeknights at the music shop. He is a helpful one, though, isn't he?
Sure is, said the mayor.
He was wearing a tan jacket. The mayor sometimes wore a tan jacket, but often did not. Then the trouble started. It began with Troy being helpful. He was carrying groceries for an old man who possibly could have carried the groceries himself. But it had been a long day and he was tired, and if Troy wanted to carry them, then he would let Troy do that. As they walked out through the parking lot, The old man and Troy passed another Troy who was jump-starting a worried teenager's car. The teenager hadn't been allowed to take the car, and now she couldn't get it to start, and she was worried about her parents coming home to both her and the car missing. "They're going to call the cops," she was saying, aloud but to herself. "I'm going to be in so much trouble." Troy had hooked the cables to his battery and was in the process of hooking up the other side to her car when Troy walked by with the old man and his groceries. "Hello," said Troy. "Oh, hi there," said the other Troy. The old man and the teenager gaped at the Troys and at each other. Troy kept carrying the groceries and hooking up the jumper cables. He turned and looked back at the old man, who had stopped walking. "What's wrong?" Troy asked. And with that, Troy started to multiply. First a little, and then more than a little. He was everywhere. He was competent and friendly and helpful. And there were so many of him. The citizens of King City had no idea what to do. They looked to their mayor for guidance. Their mayor had no idea what to do. He put on his tan jacket, because it happened to be chilly that day, and he went to visit Troy, or one of the Troys, the one he thought was the original, although it was difficult to tell at that point. Troy smiled when he opened his door. "Oh, hey," Troy said, lounging back in toward his living room. "Come on in, man. Do you want something to drink? Water? A beer?" "No, that's okay," said the mayor. "Listen, Troy, I have some questions."
"Sure, no problem."
"Troy, where did you come from exactly?" Troy frowned.
"Place called Nightvale. Great town, grew up there. Never actually lived anywhere else. But got a lot of heartbreak back there. Lot of bummer life decisions. King City is nice. Plus, I feel like I'm doing real good here. Hey, speaking of which, anything you need to get done? I'm feeling productive today."
"No, Troy, thank you." The mayor sat uncomfortably in a comfortable chair.
"Troy, there are more of you."
"Yeah," said Troy.
"There are lots of yous. There are multiple Troys."
"Well, sure," said Troy. "I think we're all being pretty helpful, though, right? Listen, if any of them aren't helpful, you come talk to me. I'll set myself right."
"Helpfulness is not the problem, Troy. The problem is that people do not multiply. There is never suddenly more of a person."
"Of course there is. Look at me." He frowned again. "I don't know. Where I'm from, you just kind of roll with things. I guess I assumed this place would be like that, too."
"We like you, Troy," said the mayor in the tan jacket, "but we're confused."
"Oh, hey, I like you all, too." Troy got up. The mayor got up, too. "This is a great town you have. I'm going to keep doing my best to make it better."
He started to guide the mayor out the door.
"Thanks so much for coming by. Feel free to come by any time if you have something needs doing or if you just want to talk. I love talking."
The mayor left the house, feeling uneasy and like he had not accomplished anything at all. The Troys continued to multiply. Soon there were entire neighborhoods full of them, smiling and waving and offering to help each other out. The other people in King City changed, too. They became forgetful. They found they were talking less to people that did not live in King City. They would get calls from their mother telling them that they hadn't called in so long, and they would realize that until the moment she called, they had forgotten that they had a mother. It wasn't just their memory. There was something happening physically. They were finding it harder and harder to leave town. They would try to do just a quick 20-minute drive out of city limits and find that all roads led back to town, that the sky for a moment looked like video static, or maybe just a lot of stars, more stars than anyone had ever seen. But either is strange in the middle of the day, right? The 101, so closely tied to the life of the town, became impossible to reach. There didn't seem to be any entrances, and no matter where they drove, it didn't seem to get any closer. Soon they couldn't even hear it, as close as it was.
silence descended on their town. And the Troys continued to multiply. The mayor tried to warn the town about Troy, but no one could hold that thought in their minds long enough to do anything about it. "We need a mayor," they would say. "A mayor would be able to lead, would know what to do." And then they would discover that they had a mayor, but had forgotten about him. And then they would forget that they had discovered that. The man who happened to be mayor the day that Troy came to town felt these changes too. He went home less and less. Sometimes he would forget where his home was. And even when he did go home, his wife and daughter and he would all stare at each other with wide, blank eyes, unsure of who any of them were, terrified of the strangers in their home. Every time he looked down, he seemed to be wearing that tan jacket. He would decide to take it off, and then he would forget, until he noticed again, and the process would repeat. Soon he stopped going home at all. This was not a decision, it was just what happened. He always seemed to be at City Hall, with a staff who did not know who he was, or that they even had a mayor. The only thing he could hold clearly in his mind was the place that Troy was from, a town called Nightvale. So he went looking for Nightvale. Nightvale is not an easy place to find, but he had a lot of time. In the infinite weirdness that had descended on King City, time was an inexhaustible resource. He made it to Nightvale and began trying to see if anyone could help him save his city from Troy. He spent months, maybe even years there. He wasn't sure. No one could remember talking to him or what they talked about. No one could help him. And then he talked to Diane, and she, for whatever reason, mentioned Troy in passing. So the mayor, whose name was not Evan McIntyre, began working at Diane's office to learn more about Troy. A man of many selves, but only one form. And in time, learned about his son, Josh, a boy of many forms, but only one self. And the mayor knew what he had to do. He wasn't happy about it. But then, nothing made him happy anymore. "Your Josh is the son of the man that took my town from me," the man in the tan jacket said to Diane. "Your son Josh is also an unusual person, but he is different than his father. I need his help to understand Troy and save my town." He sighed, looking out his window as though the view were anything but a wall and a garbage can. "I feel as though we have been replaced by some other King City that has gone on with the normal progression of its life as a city, right where we left it, diverging from us as we have spiraled out into whatever part of space and time you would call this." Diane stood. She didn't care about the man or his town. "Tell me where you took my son. I want my son." The flies swarmed again, catching Diane off guard. She stumbled backward into the leather chair. The man in the tan jacket shook his head. "Space and time are weird, right?" He was right. "Listen, Evan, or whatever your name is, it's terrible what happened to your town. But I need my son back, because as much as I care about the world, I care more about my son. You have a daughter, you understand?"
I do have a daughter," he said, turning back around to face her. "And as much as I care about your son, I care more about my daughter. You, I'm sure, understand. We've all had family taken from us because of Troy."
She pointed at him. She meant it.
"Understand this. I will find my son. I will find my son right away."
Which is when her son walked in with Jackie. He had a squat body and enormous antlers.
"Hi, Mom," Josh said.
The Voice of Nightvale. "Break into his storage locker. Who would do such a thing?"
Feral dogs, probably. They are notorious thieves. In other news, a recent report suggests that things may not be as they seem. The report explains that things are definitely what they are,